Organized religion. Is it the key to your spiritual salvation, or are you merely an employee to the world's largest corporations? What you're about to hear from my guest today may shock and surprise you. Stay tuned. Hello, I'm Christopher Hartman, and welcome to The Different View. Allow me to introduce my guest this evening to talk about the book that your church doesn't want you to read. Please say hello to our first guest, Steve Allen. You may know him as the originator of The Tonight Show and author of over 49 books. How you doing, Steve?
We will find out as we go along.
Indeed we will. And Jordan Maxwell. Jordan is a researcher of religion and politics and an author of many books. Jordan, how are you doing?
Comparatively well, everything considered. Thank you.
Sounds good. And the editor to this incredible book, controversial book, Mr. Tim Leadham.
Tim?
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
And, of course, Bill Jenkins. You'll know him from being a news anchor on the ABC television. And the host to a show, how long was that on, Bill?
It was on about 9 years.
9 years, The Open Mind. Say hello to Bill Jenkins.
And I'm glad to be here, too, and looking forward to it.
Thanks, Bill. Today we're going to talk about a most controversial subject in regards to religion, organized religion, spirituality. And our editor, Mr. Tim Leadham, has compiled this book. I think it's about over 500 pages?
Just about 460 pages.
460 pages. Tim, why did you do this book? I mean, how unusual, the book your church doesn't want you to read.
Okay, well, I think the overview that that I had was to bring to light to the mainstream a lot of ideas that have been shelved over the years by organized religion, because I think one thing that organized religion has in common is that it wants people to be subservient and not to think for themselves. And the more that I've gotten into to religion and research and met with people like Jordan Maxwell and Steve Allen and Robert Eisenman, and who got the Dead Sea Scrolls released in 1991, and of course Bill Jenkins with his program, was that a lot of information that is legitimate has been shelved because it's going to make people think. And when people think, they start losing control. And religion is so intricate in our society, and cultural myths, whether it's Jesus or Muhammad or Krishna or whatever, have been institutionalized over the years and deified so the church can continue its works. And of course, Christianity and the thoughts and times and ideas that are now, I guess, productized here in our country, Western Christianity. All the ideas, whether it's the virgin birth, the crucifixion, the resurrection, the father as a carpenter, go back many, many centuries before that.
Before the time of Christ, you
before
mean.
The time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 years before that, whether it's the Sumerians or the Egyptians or the Macedonians or whatever. And people don't understand this. And what the church has done with the absence of hard facts, not myths, not fictions, not stories, they've institutionalized this, and through psychology, through spatial repetition, again and again and again, if you hear about a virgin birth, that it's original, if you hear about a crucifixion original, and you hear it 365 days a year from 400 sources every week, you're going to start to believe it. And it's the same thing, not to make a total analogy, but in Nazi Germany, which was the Skinner box of telling the German people again and again and again, and they had no other source, they started to believe that. And this these ideas have just been brought into, as Marshall McLuhan said, with his global village and electronic village, and the media is the massage, or the media is the message. These same ancient stories, which really have not systematically been challenged for 3,000 or 4,000 years, are now into the marketplace in books, in programs like the Trinity Broadcasting, whether it's Billy Graham. He may be a fine person, but he's certainly not telling the truth.
Now, wait, you're saying this, that what appears to be so perfect, so believable. Now, this is an open question to anybody who wants to answer. You're saying that the organized religion that you're speaking of has a hidden agenda, and that every single component person, or is it just on the top?
No, it's, I think, number one, and I'll certainly pass this on to our other authors here, but just generally, there is a story that is neat and clean. Whether it's salvation, whether it's Jesus, whether it's the Trinity. And this has been used by people who sometimes are ignorant of what they're saying, but also whether it was the originators of Christianity as we know it, the Catholic Church, it's been perpetuated because in 325 A.D., at the Council of Nicene, King Constantine needed a religion to unite his various peoples, from Spain to Greece, through Europe, through Africa, etc. And he found a nice story. And then it came down from the top, and it was given a hierarchy. And from there on in, we've had this story of Christianity, which has been the most aggressive of all the religions, and it has put itself against all these other people who have the same stories, whether it's the Muslims or the Buddhists.
Same kinds of stories.
Same kind of stories. Mm-hmm. And this has divided our nation. And in 1991, when we had the war, the Desert Storm, it was satanic Christian America against the evil and the devil of the unbelieving in the Mideast.
That's one thing I've never understood. Yeah. I've never understood how a creator, we say that a creator has us warring against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, what is that?
Well, that's simply the fact that the creator has nothing to do with all of this. I think is one of the basic things. Yes, there is a creator. I don't think all of this came out by just happenstance, but when we look at the human experience on the face of this planet, I'm not too sure that the creator of the universe had a great deal to do with it. We deal in a very, very narrow time frame. We look upon what we read about in the Bible as taking us all the way back to the beginning of time. Well, that just really isn't so. There wasn't a thing in the Bible about the dinosaurs, and we know that they were here. Jurassic Park existed. We have a very, very narrow time frame, and that time frame that we think is it really got established within the last 2,000 years. But we can go back to Mesopotamia, which is where evidently all of our civilizations began, and we can look at things that were happening there 250,000 years ago. And what was happening there were civilizations. What was happening there was buildings that sometime had buildings that were 80 stories tall.
On this planet?
On this planet.
How come we're not taught that in school?
Well, I don't know why you're not taught that in school, because we always had the idea that it came.
Not that, no.
We had the idea that, perhaps the beginning of our civilization was in the Nile Valley, or maybe it was Greece or Athens. Well, no, it wasn't. They had great civilizations going on back in that antiquity. Now, we can use this, the source for this, are those ancient writers. We now can read those ancient tablets from the people of Sumer. That was where the cradle of civilization came from the Sumerian language. All of the languages on the earth really dovetail right into it. And they're telling us this story of what was happening there. Civilizations rose and fell and rose and fell. And now we know that there was a civilization here that was composed of those that did not come from earth. The evidence of that is rather overwhelming. So,
could you backtrack on that for a minute? I don't know that, and I'm available
certainly
to be enlightened.
All right. We look at what the ancient Sumerians and Babylonians say, and just to give you
a quick look at it. They tell us that there is a planet that is, they call it the 12th planet, because they consider the moon and the sun a planet too. So this would be the 12th planet that comes in orbit every 3,600 years. Now, the Naval Observatory says that there is such a body out there, and it is a large one, about the size of Jupiter. Amazing. That's exactly what the ancient Sumerians were said, that it could
Does
very
it have
well.
A modern scientific name?
The name of it now is Murdoch, I believe is what they call it. That's the name they're giving it. It's not a scientific name. That's the name that the ancients...
I mean, as scientific as the word Saturn.
No, they don't have that because we haven't looked at it yet. You see, we have to see everything around us before we can believe it, but we can look at the movement of stars, as they do at the Naval Observatory. We can discern, find out that there are celestial beings that we haven't seen yet. Maybe a planet around a sun out there.
When you say celestial beings, the word beings should perhaps be...
I meant bodies.
Okay.
You weren't talking of angels.
I wasn't talking of angels. No, not little ones or big ones. But they were talking about this. But I think some of the more interesting things that they said, that they gave us the history of that civilization, which came here before man existed. They were mining gold from Africa because they needed the gold in the atmosphere of their planet that moved around. They got tired of that working, so they wanted some sort of robots or something to come in. So they engaged in some genetic engineering with the indigenous primates down in Africa and made the workers. And
what is the literary source for this fascinating information?
Yes, the literary source for this is the ancient Sumerian text. Now, these old boys were either science fiction writers that make Gene Roddenberry look like he was not even in kindergarten mm-hmm. yet, or they were historians. So you got to make the matter. I think one of the more incredible things to add validity to what they're saying was developed by NASA just 3 years ago in the book of Zechariah Sitchin's, where he talked about the wars of gods and men. He's talking about the war between these two brothers that come from this planet, and they perfectly describe a nuclear attack on what they said was a spaceport in what is now the Sinai Peninsula. And then the two R&R places and a little seaport on the Sea of Aqaba. That this happened 2,000 years B.C., 2064, I think it was. Well, it was a neat story, and it was perfect. The flash, the column of smoke, the mushroom cloud, the winds, and then the cloud that drifted over to the Zagros Mountains and killed everything in the peninsula. About 3 years ago, NASA was flying over the peninsula and was testing its new X-ray radar, where it could look at ancient riverbeds and things. And when it came over the center of the Sinai Peninsula, there were three round black imprints in the ground. There were two more at Sodom and Gomorrah, the ancient site of Sodom and Gomorrah, and another one on the seashore. We see those black prints also in New Mexico. We also see them in Nevada. We also see them at
Hiroshima.
Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
And your point?
We also see them in Soviet Union. All right, my point being here that the ancient Sumerians were telling us of an atomic holocaust, telling us where it was and when it was, and we now can validate that that was true. We have to be very careful and say that those people couldn't have an atomic bomb because, you know, the guys from MIT just weren't there then.
Right.
And so they were, and we have historical evidence of it. So it's new credence needs to be taken into what these old people were telling us. We know that they were developing great civilizations, and we know that we don't talk about it in any of our litany today.
Right.
It's never mentioned whatsoever. And we do know that there was a great effort between those from this 12th planet and the people that they created, and here we were establishing the elitist order, the workers and the elitist ones.
Jordan, you had some.
Pardon me for being rudeness to interrupt, but I must follow up on something. Is there any information of the sort you've just been kind enough to share with us in the book titled, The Book Your Church Doesn't Want You to Read?
We refer to various stories. There isn't, really.
Okay. then you may get back to your...
I think just the point that Bill's trying to make is that there are a lot of things that have been shelved for the convenience of those that control things and the inconvenience for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just basically an example.
In this case, we would seem to have a perhaps unprecedented situation in which both science and organized religion mm-hmm. are our fellow partners in the shelving.
Sometimes unwittingly, but and sometimes in concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you found that out.
Well, my mother had an uncle when I was a child who worked in the Vatican Secretary of State's office as a civilian. And I don't remember a whole lot about him, but I just remember that when he was when he would come home, my two uncles who were federal judges and my other uncle was a Catholic priest, and we had politicians in the family, and everyone would come over, and I remember sitting and listening to the men talk. And one thing I do remember my dad saying all the time is that there's never been a political movement that wasn't a little religious, and there's never been a religious movement that wasn't a little political. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I grew up understanding that there is, in point of fact, and to my understanding, religion is one hand, politics is another, and they help orchestrate things. These are powerful entities, and consequently, we know that that's been the case in ancient history, that the kings of great nations were also the high priest who represented the deities also. Well, we've got the same kind of thing going today. Happily, we have divisions of government, so of course the church is invited to the White House for their prayer meetings, and they open up the Congress with prayer. But nonetheless, the military still has their paid chaplains, and there is a collusion, as far as I'm concerned, between politics and religion, because they're both philosophies, and they're both philosophies which promote, as Bill was saying, an elitist concept of, well, somebody's going to run the world, and somebody's got to do this. It might as well be us.
Mm-hmm. Now, isn't it true? Do you think that we're a Christian nation? Because I'll tell you that isn't the beginning, like our founding fathers were more in the area of Masons or even atheists,
yeah.
Right?
Well, atheists or whatever, yeah. I think that there are probably a mixture. I think that some of the people coming over here were running from the Catholic Church and wanted to be Christians in their own particular way, and so they wanted to follow the Protestant view. And I think some of the politicians that came over here used that. So yes, there were some Christians who came over and did some great things in the founding of the country. But there were Freemasons who also were very important in the founding of this country and setting up the laws and regulations. There were those people who were, I suppose we would call them humanists, who also were very instrumental in helping to form the Constitution and the actual bylaws of the country.
So Universalists, Unitarians, Quakers,
Deists.
What would you say to a Christian person that is more or less closed to any other thinking than what he has been conditioned to or studied all his life, studied the Bible as he knows it, his parents know it? What would you say to them to in regards to this information?
It would depend. If you're talking to 57 such people, you could probably appeal reasonably to about six of them, and the rest would be pretty much a lost cause. Once the mind is committed to any sort of programmed philosophy, it's very hard to open up a crack and get through there with facts or truth of any kind.
Sure.
Bystanders, if you could find any unbiased bystanders, might marvel at the density, the ignorance of the person you're trying to enlighten, and they might also do you the compliment of saying, what a wise and well-informed fellow this is. Why can't he convince the dummy? But the fact is, he can't. The human mind changes very slowly, except in extremely rare and dramatic situations. If you could change people's attitudes, and let's assume for the better, very quickly, the process of psychiatric analysis would take one afternoon. In fact, it may take many years.
Right.
And it's two intelligent people talking to each other, but the person that needs help may require many years to get straight.
Sure, because after all, if there is hidden agenda here, politically and economically based, then how many centuries has it taken to take hold in the world as it is today, if that's absolutely true?
One thing to suggest to the true believer, to use that term, capital T, capital B, is to dispose him toward at least being impartial about science. Science really deals with knowledge. Individual scientists make errors, and as we look at the history of science, we see they too incorporated some now recognized as absurd beliefs at different points in the past. But those were the exceptions. By and large, it was a mighty river whose only purpose, whose only function was to find truth. Whether the truth about this cup or that light or the sun, whatever it might be. And no scientist ever thought, I know what I'll do. I'll get into science and I'll do a lot of harm. That's not how it works.
Right.
You're fascinated by looking at a light. So we now, I think, are more inclined to respect science than, we know this, we're more inclined to respect science today. than ever in the past. And once you can get somebody to take an unbiased attitude towards science, even as an abstraction, then you can say, good, now let me grab you by the lapels and bring something else to your attention. For centuries, the churches, organized religion, have opposed science bitterly. Not all members of the Methodist Church or the Catholic Church or the Jewish faith or whatever. Some of them were, in fact, scientists. But as a large generality, it is simply true. It is simply the case. And this is well documented, of the opposition. This is well documented in an important book that everyone really should read. Whether you're an atheist or believer, whatever you are, you should know this book. A History of the Warfare Between Science and Theology. That's one of the titles. Or between science and religion. Unless you've become familiar with the information in that book, you really don't know what the hell we're talking about here today, to be very blunt.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I want to reiterate at this time that this show, hopefully, and I know that all of us have that viewpoint, that we're after the truth.
Yes.
We're after that. We're not after debarring or debasing anything at all, any organization, but simply to bring out the truth, which I need to make a statement here. In regards to science versus religion, and I would say that maybe astrology, which is, I think, in the mainstream, somewhat controversial on its validity, but I just recently came from San Francisco and just went to Washington Square. I was walking the street, and I came upon St. Peter and St. Paul Church. I looked up on the church, and in marble, carved in there, were zodiac signs. Where the winged phoenix, the winged cow, which are the fixed signs and main component in the research of astrology, which showed me that there had to be a basis from long ago, because I think that church was made like in 1890 or 1900.
The basis for what?
Basis that sciences like astrology...
It is not a science, but proceed.
Okay.
It's a discipline of its own, sir.
I would think so, and I think that in some minds it is based on science because it has to deal with the calculations of the planets and various, but there's various schools and thinkings on that.
Sure.
Anyway, my point was, is that I think that the religion is saying that astrology is no good at all, no validity, and yet it's on their church right there. And I thought that was fascinating.
Well, in astrology, it actually started off as just astronomy. Which is a science, and consequently there is an order to the universe, and we've learned much about that, and of course, like Steve said, it's probably more of a discipline than a science, astrology, but nonetheless, again, you're right, it shows the imprint of an ancient system on something that we are given to understand is a new, relatively new understanding for the past 2,000 years of Christianity, which in fact, this is something that's close to my heart and my work, is showing how modern-day Christianity is, in point of fact, based on ancient astrology and astrological calculations, the very concept that the Messiah is referred to as God's Son, and he has 12 helpers. Of the 12 helpers, we can go back into reference works, Christian reference works, and see that some of the early church fathers said the only reason why there would be four Gospels because there were only four seasons, and consequently the entire concept of Christianity was based on astrology. Whether it's a science or not is irrelevant, but the point is the church has hidden these things from the people, but I am here to assure you that there are very powerful people in the world, in the Vatican, in government, that know these things, but we, the people, are not privileged. And, of course, this has always been the case.
So they're keeping that information from us?
I think purposely.
Now, you have, in the book, I believe you brought out a particular thing, subject in regards to the sun. Mm-hmm. And in German, it was S-O-N,
yeah.
And the sun, S-U-N. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about
well,
that?
Well, it's just that what I was trying to say is that according to the ancient way of thinking about the cosmology of the world, they realized, all the ancient peoples realized that no one's ever seen God, and perhaps no one's ever going to see God. So what we can deduce about God or creator is from the things made. So consequently, the sun became the most important thing God has ever made, so to speak.
And you have a graphic in there that, could we see that graphic there with the people raising their hands?
Yes, raising their hands. And this, of course, the point I was making in the book is that when the raising of the hands This was done back in Sumerian times, Babylonian, Phoenician, Canaanite. The Hittites, we have pictures of them. Of course, in Egypt, it's all over Egypt with the people raising their hands. Well, what's interesting is that the Hindus, of course, and Buddhists, etc. But today we have Christians all over the world. When we see on television, Christian TV, you're talking about worshiping God's Son, and Christians are raising their hand in the same symbolism as the ancient Egyptians, Babylonians, Sumerians. The more we change, the more we stay the same. And in relation to what Steve was saying about the mind, I like the concept that the brain is like a parachute. It doesn't work very well if it's not open. Mm-hmm. And consequently, you need to look at where things came from. How did these things develop? We just don't have an America because it's been here forever. We had a beginning. So if you can go back to the beginning of this country, you can go back to the beginning of where religions began, concepts began, ideas and symbols. This is a very interesting subject. And
would you consider yourself to be religious?
No, I don't think so. I would consider myself to be spiritual, and I'm not sure how I would explain that word. But when I say spiritual, I mean I have a concern for that which is other than physical. I believe that there are the overwhelmingly important things in the spirit that are equally as important as in the physical.
So could it
mean respect for other people, respect for creation, for animals, for plants, for the earth itself. So for lack of a better term, I would say spiritual. And yes, I feel I am a spiritual person.
So that could mean possibly the enhancement of you as a spiritual being.
As an individual, yes.
How about you, Bill? Are you religious?
I certainly fall. No, I don't. Not religious in terms of formal religions. But I am concerned about the evolvement of the spirit. And I do believe, and I think it's been well taught throughout all of the societies we have here and everything that we can find out, that reincarnation is a part of life. And this is part of a learning process.
Reincarnation is a part of life?
Part of your spiritual life.
And, have you have experience with that yourself?
Well, I suppose I have. I don't have any memory of it at all. But
do you entertain that as a hard belief or just something on which your mind is open?
Well, my mind is very open on it, but I've seen some very interesting things happen and some very deep research that's been done on this that can only be explained in other ways. I bring to mind a 21-year-old girl about 10 or 12 years ago who ended up on the battleship, the Arizona, in Pearl Harbor with a group of people along with their teacher, who was from Phoenix. And all at once, she started feeling the effects of as if she were there at the attack of Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. He was a hypnotist, among other things, took her back to Arizona, worked at the University of Arizona, and regressed her. And she started speaking as Seaman John Gillespie, a 19-year-old or 17-year-old kid back in 1938, told a story of where they lived, everything about it. She even spoke in this very strange kind of way they speak east of Omaha, Nebraska, just a little small area. How he tried to get in the Army, he was too young, so then he lied and got into the Navy. He needed to help. Father didn't have any money. Got into the Navy. He could send money home. Told about it as his life in the Navy, his life down in Long Beach, and the investigators down at Long Beach in the Sheriff's Department in San Diego County went and found some of these places that she so aptly described that had long been torn down. Life at Bremerton and Washington, some of those places were gone, but that existed. The trip into Pearl Harbor, she was aboard the USS Nevada, where the Nevada parked. Now, this girl had never been out of Phoenix, you know, she wouldn't know any of these things. And then described the attack on the Arizona, the first thing, because it was parked next to her, how they tried to pull the Nevada out and get it out of the harbor,
right.
And how they then decided to beach it otherwise because it could stop the harbor, and how it was hit, and how he died,
right.
As far as that goes. And he gave all of the names of the crew members on the Nevada, and it then took the Secretary of Navy then and a couple of congressmen from Arizona to open up the sealed records of the Nevada. No one knew that guest roster. And there they all were.
Wow.
with the exception of Seaman John Gillespie.
Mm-hmm. Have you lived before, Steve?
I have no such information, but I should be back if I did.
Yeah.
I am on the side of the strong doubters about that. But on the other hand, we should always be available to consider evidence. Simply mm-hmm. because we approach it warily, that doesn't mean a damn.
Right.
That's a very convincing story. One would want to not base a firm belief for the rest of one's life on the mm-hmm. on having just heard your fascinating account. But one would like to know more and study.
Well, that has been quite documented. Mm-hmm. Frank Baranowski is the guy. He's at the University of Arizona, and mm-hmm. he deals with that.
Sure,
quite often.
I've heard many situations, and I must confess to you, I've had my own experience too, and I feel that it's really with things of the spiritual nature and things beyond the mind and beyond the physical gross matter, third dimension. That is available to each and every one of us. I feel that you have to have an open heart and open mind for sure.
True.
But you have to be, it's like the Peter Pan syndrome, I call it. Mm-hmm. You have to believe before you can fly. And it's that type of thing that it's an innate situation, just like I believe I can play this piano, I believe mm-hmm. I can write this book, I believe I can do this. You have to believe it. And then all of a sudden you are open to the possibility.
Well, there's a possibility that these experiences in previous lives are shaping the way you are now.
Yes.
Under hypnosis, we find people that can speak perfect languages, foreign languages that they couldn't speak, and some of them are speaking ancient languages.
Exactly.
That it takes very specialized teachers to understand what they
Something
are.
Something I would say also, Bill, in relation to what you brought out before about the ancients and then this subject too, the material you brought up about the ancient Sumerians is a part of the ancient cuneiform record, so it's not as if I would say that these things actually happened because I wasn't there.
No, you
could. But the mere fact that it is in the cuneiform writings, or it is in the ancient writings, and like you said, were they science fiction writers, or were they just telling us something that they knew? And, of course, it's always possible, because reincarnation has been around since the beginning of man.
The concept
of the idea has been around. I think that it's a natural concept for humans to think about, because, is it possible that this life is all there is? Could it be that we come back? And mm-hmm. so I can see how this idea would come about. And I haven't still, made a decision yet one way or the other. I tend to think that there might be something to it, because there have been an awful lot of interesting stories that have no other explanation. So I appreciate what you're saying.
I got to just share something right here, because I'm excited about that you folks are talking about this. One little thing. Now, this is something to try at home. Is breath. And it's a quick breath called fire breath. And you just sit there when you're very comfortable. And you breathe really quickly like that for as long as you can, with the idea of just watch yourself at what happens. And if anything that you imagination I always call a great tool of God, the state of images, anything that you imagine is the open door to a possibility of an experience that could change your life, change mm-hmm. your consciousness.
I know that there is the concept of peak experience. And I'm sure all of us have had peak experiences, I have, where you get a brilliant insight for a moment into something. I mean, I think this is all humans are mm-hmm. able to, all humans are able to do this. I don't put down the idea of any of these spiritual, other than, for a better term, spiritual. I think that there is something more to the world that we live in than the mundane that we...
Right, and I think the reason...
I don't know exactly what it is all the time, but
right.
I do believe it's there.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason that we're talking about it now, it's part of the agenda of the withheld information, because if that was true, that we did live before, mm-hmm. that we could have experiences like this to promote self-sovereignty and self-containment, that our salvation was with ourselves as opposed to an outside source.
Why does possibility A lead to conclusion B? I'm not arguing.
I understand.
I don't understand. What if any one of us did live in a little fishing village in Italy in 1406? So what? To put it very simply.
That's what part that of your growing experience, that's all.
And what that would mean is that you are possibly immortal. And that the body dies for sure, or maybe not. But there's possibility of immortality there, and if that's the case, control is out of the question.
This is a very good point, because from the church's point of view, if everybody had the idea then that they were immortal and they could go on and become some other things, they're not too interested in what the good Father has to say to them about their spiritual life.
Exactly. And if your salvation isn't somebody outside yourself, another entity, another being, mm-hmm. but it's something that you do with your own life and what you uncover and the truth that you uncover, because the truth will set you free.
Another thing that gives them a problem here are the out-of-body travelers. Now, Northwest Airline hires Search and Prove, which is a group of out-of-body travelers.
Right.
What they do is to go into the wings of the 747s, and they've been taught what to look for, and they come back and accurately tell them where there's a stress point here and a stress
wow.
point there. Now, they're going out-of-body.
Northwest Airlines, you say?
Northwest yeah. Airlines. Give them a call.
Northwest Airlines, out-of-body travelers.
Right. I'll check it
we have an official research team here, folks. This is the best here.
Let me throw this in, too, in relation to Steve, because I'm also feeling that Steve is wanting to say something, and I'd like to say it before he does. What we are actually originally talking about is the division between theology, religion, and science. And again, we have to go back to, fine, we could talk about reincarnation and whatever, and these are, quote, spiritual concepts, etc. But again, I have to agree with Steve that there's so much that we need to actually look at that's already been proven, that is actual hard science that we've already proven that we're not being privy to know about. And these other things are interesting and fascinating, and there may even be something to them possibly, but we still need to look at the war that is going on between belief and religion as opposed to actual provable factual science.
I agree with that, and I also agree with Bill in the way that with my research I found that there are parts of the government and parts of organized religion that know about what we speak of
mm-hmm.
and that keep it from us. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's part of the media that mm-hmm. does not present this to the mainstream people, and we're kept in the dark.
See, they look upon...
Is that right, Bill?
This is true. They look upon change or the changing of the status quo as something that is very, very detrimental to their maintaining power.
Right.
And particularly when it comes to science. The science, for instance, in the energy group now, there are new ways to develop energy. And they have nothing to do with the sunshine or the wind or all of that. There are new ways of doing it. It's in the scalar fields, or what we call the search for zero point. And they are now beginning to absolutely take away money from universities, put government money from universities who are involved in the development of this science, which we know is there. Because now you really are getting at their power structure when you start getting at petroleum as a fuel. They don't care about the fact that it's destroying our Earth. They are caring about the flow of money and the power that comes from it. There are a number of scientists that are also fighting this very desperately.
Right. The almighty corporations again, where it's money and power as opposed to truth and wisdom.
And this is a corporation called the United States.
In relation to this subject, there's a very important book out, a very thick book called Thy Will Be Done. The connection, it's a very well written, very authoritatively written book on the connecting of the oil industry's money behind certain church movements, the financing of Billy Graham's crusades, the financing of Christians in Action Airlines taking food to the poor in Central and South America. Christians in Action, we find out, was actually CIA. And consequently, there's been so many religious movements that are being financed by oil companies, large industries.
The book is titled Thy Will Be Done.
Thy Will Be Done. Mm. Yes, a fascinating reference book on the,
back to the
corporations. Corporations.
I'm just going to hand it to him. Thank you.
Yes, yeah. Corporations that finance clergymen and pastors and the church movements in Central and South mm-hmm. America.
We are a remarkable group of skeptics.
Thank God. I think doubt produces wisdom.
Just along that line, I think to if you wanted a microcosm of our society, and Karen Armstrong, who is a wonderful author and researcher, has written a book. It's called Jerusalem, One City, Three Faiths. And there you will see basically where religion, politics, military, natural resources, money all come together. And everyone has a vested interest. And you have three religions, and if you took the Christian religion, Judaism, and the Islamic religion, and you put them side by side, were there saviors, were there stories, were there hierarchy, were there spiritualism, and with all their cultural myths, you'd have a hard time really seeing any difference. Mm-hmm. However, these three religious groups represent interests, whether it's the United States, whether it's the UN, whether it's Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and they've all come in to supposedly, and here again, the cultural myths we live by, the cradle of civilization. The cradle of civilization, and we all know this, Steve has two very good books on this, and Bill has spoken on his radio program and Jordan lectures, and it's in our book. The cradle of civilization goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But for the order of things, whether it's the Western Alliance, whether it's a European marketplace or whatever, it's convenient to have the, despite all the facts, it's always convenient to have the cradle of civilization and spirituality and salvation in the holy city of Jerusalem. And it's perpetual.
You mean whether in reality it is or not?
It's not, yeah. It's convenient to keep all the parts together.
Well, something that,
if I made this on Jerusalem, there's another reason for that. I want you to imagine in your mind the globe. And we have the largest landmass on the earth is the African, Asian, European continent. And what's right in the middle of that? The Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
That is the crossroads of that huge landmass, mm-hmm. which was where most of the civilization was. There was North and South America over here.
Right.
That came up later. So here's where all of these things were crossing paths with each other.
And right. That's
but something Steve wrote in one of his books that has stuck with me, he brought out how in Nazi Germany, what happened, the Germans were not a animalistic and a barbarous people. They were just people. In the grip of an idea, and good people, educated
they were the most,
people.
They were the most educated. The most educated people in Europe and the most religious.
Right.
Kind of a scary fact.
Is that in this book here? I just so happen to have a copy of it?
Yes. I wrote two volumes. It was one manuscript, but it was so long they made two books out of it. My title for it was The Mystery of the Bible, because the Bible is, to this moment, profoundly mysterious, although there have been thousands, scores of thousands of books analyzing it from many points of view. However, the publisher chose to change the title to put my name into it, Steve Allen, On the Bible, Religion, and Morality.
Uh-huh.
This brings us back, or at least brings me back, to the question, the unresolved question about reincarnation. When I said, so what, I wasn't being facetious. I mean, what should we assume or conclude or hope for if A is a fact? Jesus, and I'm sure many other prophets, existing or not, are quoted as having said, in effect, by their fruits you shall know them, by the results. Mm-hmm. What does something produce? And if it produces good results, then it's to that extent anyway, it's a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what if there are reincarnation experiences, either for everybody who ever lived or for 8%, whoever knows what the reality is, does that make them better or worse people? How do they behave? In other words, there are many forms of this this question. What does it mean if you are a Lutheran? Does that make you a better human being than you were before you became a Lutheran? In many cases, as I observe actual believers, I don't see that they're any great example for their, any great role model for their team.
Mm-hmm.
We could all name certain individuals who are deplorable human beings, and yet they're pretty proud of being Jews, Catholics, whatever they are. So what if we are brought back every 412 years, or as soon as your grandmother dies, or whatever the system is?
Right.
Does this mean we're better now than we were in 1702? And if not, what's the point?
Well, I think that, and this is probably a way away from mainstream, but I think the innate emotion or energy that we all are, every single human life form, plants, animals included, is love. The vibration, the energy called love. And the highest form of love is allowance, acceptance. And I think that our lessons in coming down here from lifetime to lifetime is if we experience something that we judge to be horrible, that we have guilt about, then that houses in our soul. And we have to come back again until we can have that experience and be in love with that experience. Meaning, you may hate that experience, like your dog being run over, but you accept that experience as a full experience consciously. So you accept it as, oh my God, this is so painful for me, but I allow this to be. Because tell me what not is God.
Say that again. Tell me what?
Tell me what God is not.
What God is not.
And what that means is that you enlighten the soul or and you become your pure source, ultimately. And that to me would be enlightenment from anything. Mm-hmm. And I feel that if you reach a lifetime, and as you progress lifetime to lifetime, if you reach a lifetime where you totally learned your lessons, or you turn the judged experiences, we have guilt and judgment, as I'm a horrible person, to, all right, that's an experience. And I allow myself to be that. That frees you up, and therefore you leave the cycle of reincarnation. That's just a belief.
I am not convinced, because that would ultimately smooth over Dachau and Charles Manson and the Mafia and all the horrible things that happen every day on this troubled
planet. Well, let me ask you something, Steve. Yeah. That's a good point. Your God, whoever that may be or whatever that may be, looks at Charles Manson or whoever,
mm-hmm.
and does he say, you're a bad boy, I'm going to punish you? Or does he say, this is an experience, it's not the highest, for sure, because you killed my children. Learn a little bit better.
I think you'd lead to the idea that maybe all of the living experiences that people go through were positive. They could have been very discordant. And so now we have a person who is truly evil that is coming back into this fray of ours. And maybe that explains where the Charles Mansons come from, mm-hmm. that they have had a series of horrible lives, terrible lives, well, and that's because of their spiritual personality becomes that.
But
that would drive your own personality.
You can make all the Charles Mansons you want right now, even if there is no reincarnation, by subjecting them to the same kind of childhood he had, and it produces monsters. Many of them, fortunately, end up in our prison.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, unfortunately.
Well, we have some monsters that came out of the finest homes, too.
True, but there is a direct correlation between growing up in a urban or any kind of a jungle and the kind of person you are at 18, in which case you're probably a serial killer, a rape. I mean, Freud was not wrong about everything. You know.
Right, exactly. But and to answer my question, what does your God do? How does your God deal with evil?
Well, I don't know that it does. I'm trying to figure out the concept of God. I again have to say that I have a high respect for what I consider to be spirituality, meaning when I use the term spirituality, concentrating or an understanding that there's more to life than the physical life we live. There are morals, there are ethics, there are values, there are ideals. There are things which transcend the human experience, which are bigger than all of us together. Great things that we should see together, great ideals we should strive together. So I put the word spiritual. I'm not sure that's an adequate word, but that's the only one I can come
right.
up with. But
well, on the spiritual thing, I do think one of the things that feeds it nothing is what we do mostly, and that's tradition, ceremony, and rote.
Oh, yes, absolutely, I agree.
This is a meaningless gesture. What it is saying, I'm being godly.
Yeah.
And you're going ahead and doing anything that you want to, but you put on the cap or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I totally agree.
You know, this is a marvelous forum, because we're going into areas that's not much talked about in this depth in the mainstream media, unfortunately. Do you think that it is? Do you think that there's information being withheld from that source that the American public views? I didn't see on Jay Leno, you know, the talk about this.
Yeah. Well, I can only speak for myself. I tend to shy away from conspiracy theory. There are actual conspiracies, but there aren't as many as I keep reading about and hearing about and running into in cocktail party conversation.
Theories or facts?
Conspiracy theories that everything would be fine if we got rid of all the Catholics or the Jews or the tall people or whatever, whoever you're the capitalist, whoever you,
it's the tall
there's
people.
A blank
that
line
you
write
people get rid of them too.
But nevertheless, conspiracy theory is very energizing. The populist movement, as it calls itself, the hard fanatical right, as even the other conservatives call it in this country, get 90% of their energy at least from the sense that they are being conspired against. You can just say to them, black helicopters, and they fly around the room, you know, or New World Order or whatever. And they would never give that up, even if God himself said, wait a minute, I've got to butt in now and then. This is really stupid. Stop that. They would say, to hell with you, God. We're getting a lot of
they have investment in that.
Yeah.
However, on the other hand, if I was a powerful person involved in some sort of devious conspiracy, the thing that I would want to do first is to get that kind of thinking out there, that, oh, conspiracies, that's terrible.
Right.
You know, that's right. I would want that thinking permeating the media, for instance.
Exactly.
I would really
and
want that.
And that we do hear a lot of.
Yeah. It's about the Air Force officer the other day who was trying to explain and close the book on the Roswell incident.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it really wasn't that. It was little dummies we dropped as an experiment from the airplane in 1953, except they landed in 1947. Well, so we found a little time warp there, and he said, well, how do you explain it? He says, well, everybody has a little time compression problem of remembering things that happened that long ago. I don't.
That man would appear to have been a dunce, however.
A real dunce.
His ignorance doesn't resolve the issue.
No, it doesn't.
Well, more people should read magazines like Free Inquiry, mm-hmm. The Skeptical Inquirer. They are science-based, and many of the editors and writers are formal and proud atheists. For those who give a damn, I'm not an atheist. I simply don't know. I'm an agnostic, which is quite a separate category. But there's not enough application of scientific thirst for evidence. We are never going to run out of remarkable assertions. Some of them will turn out to be right. Many of the scientific truths perceived as such today were considered preposterous when they were first brought up.
Yes.
So just because something sounds wacko, you should never say, therefore it is, and I'm not going to ever look at it. Keep an open mind, as we've already suggested.
Mm-hmm. Good name for a show.
I thought it was.
One thing, just an expansion on what Steve said, and I don't know if you coined this phrase yourself, reductionist thinking.
No.
But you've brought it out several times, and I'd hate to be accused of defending religion as such after the books that we've been involved in. However, I think there is a great mystery out there, and religionists, whether they were the higher source or the medium source, were trying to solve a mystery. And they were trying to do it the best way they can. And the thing that will is the difference between the free thought community and religion is this. We don't have the answers here in this room. We don't confess because we don't have the answers and someone else doesn't believe or agree with us that they're going to go straight to heaven or straight to hell. We don't have that. We're trying to say to people in our book and books that, and programs that that we've been on is examine everything for yourself, because unless you do, you're going to accept somebody else's answer, and that might not be true. And it's been institutionalized now. You can see that from the very, very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of the global village, you can be bombarded on the internet, on television, on radio, with this is the way things are, send in your money, and we're going to don't make the check out to Jesus, but make it out to us, and we'll make sure that your salvation is taken care of.
Right.
And this is so preposterous and so outrageous, but people have been dumbeth down, to coin a phrase from Steve, to starting to believe that, and intelligent people.
Well, they'll also include an autographed picture of Jesus that glows in the dark.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's worth it then.
Yes.
This is a serious show, Bill.
But the fact is that that I was privileged to go to a biblical conference in San Francisco, where they had 7,500 participants from all over the world, our best universities, our archaeologists, etc. And 85% of all of the people there who have studied the Bible, who have studied archaeology, a study of science, are non-believers. And over 90% of all the department heads in religion throughout the United States are either agnostics, atheists, or say, I don't know.
Fascinating.
That's fascinating.
They would also recognize that to take two little loose threads that we've dealt with here and try to tie them up together, if there is reincarnation, then the formal religions are all in serious error on that question.
Yeah.
You used the term a moment ago, in quotation marks, I assume, go straight to hell or straight to heaven. Mm-hmm. That rules out reincarnation. Reincarnation, you go back to Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, actually, it doesn't. We can say this about the Christian religion. The Church of the first four centuries was very much a believer in reincarnation. Writings of Origen and St. Augustine's and all of that.
Yeah.
And that was cut out by Justinian and Theodora because they had killed 600,000 people in the Colosseum for not being Christians, and they got worrying about their next lifetime. And so they just fixed that.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very, very much. This has been both entertaining and enlightening for sure.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely.
Steve Allen, continued success. And with your book, The Steve Allen on the Bible, Religion, and Morality, what's next for you, Jordan?
Hopefully a television series I'm working on.
We'll be looking forward to that. Bill?
Well, I'm doing a series of books, audio books, for audio literature. It's the works of Zechariah Sitchin, of which we mentioned part of it here. It's called The Earth Chronicles. The 12th planet was the first one. Stairway to Heaven will be the second one, which is where they found the spaceport and how they got up to themselves.
Terrific.
Interesting things.
Success with that, Bill.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And we have a book coming out next month. It's called The Main Man, which the main man of history is Jesus, and End Times, and going back to, again, another preposterous story about the return of Jesus in the year 2000, and we look at it
He was supposed to get here in 1986,
that's
too.
That's right.
That's true.
Well, our book will be out.
Success with that,
Thank you very much.
You're also part of an organization called the Truth Seekers,
which
I admire. It's been around for how long?
Founded by Robert Ingersoll and people like Mark Twain and Thomas Jefferson, or not Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Edison were all involved, and Stanger, et cetera.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Until next time, The Different View. This is Christopher Hartman. Don't forget, no matter where you are, no matter what you do, I want you always to be open to The Different View. Good night.